From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carol Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody. We got a great show for you today. We have one of my favorite authors, Michael Lewis. He's the author of The Blind Side and Moneyball, among other books. He'll be joining us later. But first, this is our first show since America, as we know it, came to an end. So a couple of programming notes. Originally, we were told just to play an hour of patriotic music, but then our local commissar informed us we'd be allowed to spend the hour praising our great leader. Thankfully, though, we were able to convince our commissar that we are, in fact, Car Talk. So we are going to make dumb jokes like we normally do. And I hope Tom and Ray enjoy the re-education camp. Help us subvert the revolution. Give us a call, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello, Peter. This is Jeff Pearson from Lincoln, Nebraska.
Hey, how are things in Lincoln?
Well, it's that weird time of year when, you know, it can be 60 degrees one day and snow the next day. So we're hoping the snow is done for good, though.
And you enjoy the Nebraska lifestyle?
It's the good life, for sure.
Yeah. I don't know if the words Nebraska and lifestyle have ever been said before. I'm glad to do it. Well, welcome to the show, Jeff. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to an author and a humorist who will be hosting a spell check, a spelling bee for grown-ups, on April 3rd at the Latches Theater in Brattleboro, Vermont, Mr. Tom Baudet.
Hi, Jeff.
Hello, Tom.
Next is one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column is Roxanne Roberts.
Hi, Jeff.
And joining our panel for the first time, an alum of Second City and Mad TV, an actor, comedian, and writer, Mr. Keegan Michael Key.
Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Keegan.
Jeff, welcome to the show. You're going to start us off with Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle, of course, is going to recreate for you dramatically, three quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain just two of them. Do that, you'll win our prize, Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine. You ready to go?
Yes.
All right. Here is your first quote.
This is a big bleeping deal.
That was Vice President Joe Biden, who did not, by the way, say bleepin'. He was eloquently describing what big bill?
The passage of the health care bill.
Exactly right. In all the joy, yep. In all the joy and excitement at the White House about having passed this huge legislative deal, someone forgot to lock the Joe Biden enclosure. So he escaped, and his motto, delivered to the president, too near a live mic, is now enshrined in history. As many observed this week, FDR became known for the New Deal. Truman, the square deal, and the Obama administration will be known for the big bleepin' deal.
Well, you know, I think it's really, it's kind of time, I think, to decriminalize that word.
But that's the fun of it.
Well,
Tom.
I know. I mean, everybody uses it. My 4-year-old uses it.
Right. So,
and Tom, I know, I got in big trouble for that. But.
And you know, Tom, we have decriminalized that word in California, and everybody's been using it, and I think we're all healthier, and I don't have glaucoma anymore.
Yeah, I was about to say.
I use that word so much.
You need a prescription, though.
Yes, you do. You do need a prescription.
Purposes, mm-hmm. To relieve pressure. It was funny, though, to see the Democrats. They looked so disoriented. And lost. They'd never won anything before.
Yeah.
They all look like dogs who had finally caught the car. And Obama, as you know, I mean, he managed to get this done against pretty steep odds. Nobody thought he could do it. He's feeling a little cocky, maybe not to a good end. This week, for example, he invited some terrorists to the Rose Garden just to pal around. He put up a framed copy of his Kenyan birth certificate. Like, yeah. And in a gesture of bipartisanship, he invited congressional Republicans over to watch Michelle's Kill Whitey video. Let's, for our next quote, let's go to the floor of the House of Representatives. This was late Sunday night.
Hell no, you can't.
That was a leader of a group of people who were rather unhappy this week. Who?
The Republicans.
Yes, indeed. That's right. That was John Boehner, of course, the minority leader in the House. He, of course, is mainly mad because one of the health care law provisions that goes into effect this summer is the 10% tax on tanning salons. He was furious. He was on the floor. He was light orange with rage. Well, let me ask you this. The Republicans now say they're going to repeal this. Repeal and replace. Repeal. You think they're going to actually pull that off?
I think they are overestimating the attention span of the American public.
Really? What we're back to the final season of Lost. Right. The hell with it.
We're talking, what, 6 months?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I think the American public learned more about civics and government in the last month than they ever cared to know. And I think that actually, you know, tyranny is looking pretty good from here.
I mean, the Republicans do look to me like they're a little bit in denial. In fact, you have to wonder if they're going to go through their own version of, you know, Kubler-Ross's famous stages of grief. they've gone from denial into anger, and then into more anger, and then vivid anger, and then really, really angry anger. We're kind of hoping they'll get to depression soon, when they just lie around the House chamber watching TV in their sweatpants. instead of voting yay or nay, they'll vote meh. All right, let's leave healthcare behind. And now for your last story, we're going to turn to one we didn't know if you heard about. It wasn't a huge story, but it did affect us in the news business. Here's your last quote.
And so we remember Wednesday, March 24th, 2010, as the day every English-speaking student failed their research papers.
That was a blogger marking a sad day, the day this week when what website crashed?
YouTube.
Not YouTube. Although YouTube did go down, but this was something...
Oh, Wikipedia.
Wikipedia went down, yeah. Oh. For a couple of hours on Wednesday, the wiki world stood still. College students working on term papers had to plagiarize their own thoughts. All of us confronted the dreaded file not found page when we went to Wikipedia on Wednesday. We didn't know what to do. Where else do people go for knowledge these days? Some of us took down... you know, paper encyclopedias like that Encyclopedia Britannica, but it didn't even have an entry for mating rituals among the Na'vi in Avatar. And the other thing about that paper thing is when you click on the bold words, nothing happens. By the way, Wikipedia did go back up for the end of the day, and by the way, the Na'vi mating ritual is called Shahailu, just so you know.
Shahailu.
Oh, who knew they were Jewish?
Who knew, yeah.
Funny, they don't look Jewish.
I know. Bluish,
yes.
No Shahailu tonight, I have a headache. Sorry. Or whatever that tail thing is, that
ache. Whatever, yes.
Okay. Carl, how did Jeff do in our quiz?
Jeff, you had a great game. 3 correct answers, so you win our prize.
Well done, Jeff. Aye. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Roxanne, the Tea Partiers weren't the only protesters in Washington last weekend. There's also a huge rally for immigration, where a counter-protester got into a tussle with whom?
A mascot?
No.
A fountain?
No.
Was it an inanimate object?
No, they were quite animate, although silent.
Animate but silent. I'm going to need a hint.
Well, police had no trouble tracking them because of their white faces, striped shirts, and berets.
Mimes?
It was an immigration throwdown. When anti-immigration activist Roy Beck left his home on Sunday, he knew he'd encounter thousands of immigrants and pro-immigrant protesters marching around the mall. But he never expected a hostile troop of female mimes. Beck says they harassed and insulted him and his bodyguards with, quote, crushing physical intimidation, unquote. First, we suspect by placing them in invisible boxes. Then blowing them backwards with imaginary winds. This is true. One of the bodyguards got fed up with the mimes, took out a knife, and started popping their balloons, leading to his arrest on assault charges. The crafty mimes, however, eluded the cops by climbing an invisible ladder they'd brought with them to freedom.
Were these French mimes?
No. These were all American mimes. These were. But this has totally got to destroy your cred when you go to, like, the anti-immigrant meetings. Like, well, what happened to you at the protest? We didn't see you there. It's like, yeah, well, I was chased away by, well, who? By, you know, La Raza? By roving gangs? Well, no, by mimes. But they made these faces at me, and they were so cruel.
Now, on the list of protesters that I would pick, mimes would be very low because I would consider them relatively ineffectual.
Well, and as a security force.
No, I mean, haven't
seriously.
You ever read Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals? He says, always bring mimes. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Lauren from Jacksonville, North Carolina.
Hey, Lauren, how are you?
Good. I just moved down here from Chicago, so I
won't
brag about the weather.
No, it's nice, though. No, Jacksonville, you said North Carolina?
Yes.
I didn't know there was one in North Carolina.
Yeah, it's actually home of Camp Lejeune, the largest Marine Corps base.
Oh, right. Well, welcome to our show, Lauren. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Lauren's topic?
Food. It's not just for eating anymore.
Food serves many purposes in our lives. It gives farmers something to grow. It helps us maintain our fighting weight, and it bakes into pies. But this week, we read a story about food being given a wholly different purpose. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about innovative uses for food that do not involve eating it. Your job, pick the true story, do that, and you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to play?
Yeah.
All right, first let's hear from Tom Baudet.
Ever get the feeling you're putting everything you eat directly onto your thighs? Well, now you can. Kripalu Center for Yoga and Health in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, has announced the addition of food therapy to its long menu of wellness offerings. And this isn't your mother's cucumber eye treatments. Food healer Christina Naylor explained the therapy consists of total immersion in a puree of various food combinations, depending upon your area of concern. Broccoli beet has proven effective in the treatment of mild depression, claimed Naylor. Hard to feel blue, I suppose, when you are whatever you would call that color. Garlic squash plasters, not surprisingly, have derailed stubborn sex addiction. And carrot juice immersion is thought to increase self-esteem in the face of failure, which explains two things about Senator John Boehner. All food therapy immersions are recycled from Kripalu's critically acclaimed gourmet cafeteria and are certified organic. We are devoted to better health in our ever-fattening society, said Naylor. We have put too much food into ourselves. It's time to put more of ourselves into food.
Food baths for health and well-being at a spa in Massachusetts. Your next story of repurposing refrigerated resources comes from Roxanne Roberts.
This will bring tears to your eyes. Military leaders in India have a new weapon against terror, the world's hottest chili. Bhut Jalokia, a.k.a. ghost chili, is officially, according to Guinness World Records, the world's spiciest pepper, registering a scorching 1 million Scoville units, or, as Joe Biden would say, really freaking hot. Officials are using the chilies, native to the northeast India, to make organic hand grenades for their troops. Quote, this is definitely going to be an effective, non-toxic weapon because of its pungent smell can choke tourists and force them out of their hideouts, said a defense research officer. Other uses planned for the chili, sprays for women to use against attackers, for police to use for mob control, and for the U.S. Congress for the next healthcare debate.
Chili bombs in India. Your last story of a new use for an old food. It comes from Keegan-Michael Key.
A pork loin to protect your groin. After a dismal season, the Northumberland Pumas of the British American Football Association lost their official sponsor. Without the additional funding, they couldn't afford to upgrade their equipment. That's when quarterback John Burridge, the son of a nearby pig farmer, was struck with inspiration. Pigskin pads. If you've ever had a stale pork rind, you know how tough they are to chew. When aged properly, the pig's skin make excellent athletic supporters. They're more flexible than regular pads and can withstand more impact, Burridge says. They absorb sweat, contour nicely to the human form, and after a long, sweaty game, can even give off a nice mesquite aroma.
All right, then. Let me review your choices. From Tom Baudet, a spa in Massachusetts that's offering full immersion in pureed food for your health. From Roxanne Roberts, a chili in India that the military has decided to use as a weapon in crowd control. And from Keegan-Michael Key, a football team, an American football team in Britain that's using pigskin. Instead of pork rinds, it's now athletic supporters. Which of these is the real story of repurposed foodstuffs?
I think I'm going to go with B.
You're going to go with B, Roxanne's story, the ghost chili, mm-hmm. being used to control people with its powerful heat. Is that your choice? All right. Well, we spoke to somebody who had a strong opinion about this repurposing.
It's the hottest pepper in the world. It does make sense that it would be used as a weapon.
That was Andrea Lynn. She is the senior editor of Chili Pepper Magazine.
Seriously.
By the way, there is a Chili Pepper Magazine. Congratulations, Lauren. You got it right. You've earned a point for Roxanne for being honest for once. You've earned our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting in your home answering machine. Well done, Laura.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And now the game where we ask smart people to do something stupid, namely appear in our show. Michael Lewis is one of the most influential nonfiction writers there are. His first book, Liar's Poker, was credited with helping to bring down the head of Salomon Brothers in the 1980s. His book, Moneyball, changed the game of professional baseball. And most unlikely of all, his book, The Blind Side, ended up winning an Oscar for Sandra Bullock. His new book is The Big Short. It is about the great financial crisis of the last few years. Michael Lewis, what a pleasure. Welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello, Peter.
Michael, so this book, The Big Short, is a return to the area of your first book, Finance, Wall Street. This is something that you lived back when you got out of college in the 80s, right?
That's correct. When I got out of graduate school, I took a job at the now defunct Salomon Brothers. Right. My first book was the story of that experience. It was because I couldn't understand, couldn't fathom why anybody was paying me hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to give financial advice.
Yeah.
That I thought there was a story in this. I just thought people paying me that kind of money signaled doom. And there was no way the system was sustainable. And so when I left, I really did think I was getting out at the right time. It turned out I really should have hung around another couple more decades.
Right. Because, you know, you say in the introduction to your current book, The Big Short, that you thought that book would be like a warning. Like, my God, stay away from this crazy world where they're paying young kids vast amounts of money who don't know what they're doing.
The lesson that seems to have been extracted is that if you didn't know anything about anything, you could make a fortune on Wall Street. And it attracted everybody who didn't know anything about anything, and this is what we've got.
Right. That may be the simplest explanation for how we ended up where we are. So your new book, The Big Short, it's about the current financial crisis. But what's interesting is you don't write so much about the people who caused it as the people who saw it coming.
Well, when I left Wall Street, the big Wall Street firms were kind of the smart money at the poker table. And somehow they'd become the dumb money at the poker table. I mean, they all were saddled with these horrible losses when the subprime mortgage bond market collapsed. And I was kind of curious, well, if they were the dumb money, who was the smart money?
And
there was this collection of oddballs and misfits who had basically bet on the collapse of the financial system, and those are the main characters of this story.
And some of them are rather odd, as you say.
They had a view that was at variance with the entire financial system, and if you want to have variant views, it helps to be variant.
Tell me about one of these guys, or any of them.
Well, let's pick the easiest.
Okay.
All right. The first investor to make a bet that this whole subprime mortgage bond experiment was a disaster was a fellow named Dr. Michael Burry, who was a he had been a neurologist. He quit neurology to start a hedge fund, and he doesn't know it, but he has Asperger's syndrome. He knows it now because it's in my book. But before,
wait a minute.
But
told him?
Well,
like you sent him the galleys, and he's like, wait a minute, I have Asperger's syndrome.
Maybe that perhaps that's taking too much credit.
Yeah.
But he didn't know it when he made his bet. He found out later, and he's basically isolated in a room alone, just looking at financial data. And so he's a blind judge of what's going on in the system,
and
he sees what everybody doesn't see just by looking at how bad the subprime mortgage loans have become.
So he saw that this whole thing was going to collapse because it was built on nothing.
He believed it,
and he bet against it. Ended up making a lot of money. Tell me just briefly about the guys who were betting bad, who were creating this whole thing. Were they just dumb? Did they just delude themselves because they're making so much money?
Well, I think the world would like to think they're criminals. Because they're so angry at him now, but I think it's much more interesting and complicated than that. I think really that it's amazing how much you will miss that's right in front of your face if you're paid to miss it.
Right.
And they were paid to miss it. They were paid to ignore like really simple facts. And there was so much propaganda around the market, people believed it.
May I ask a question?
Yeah.
Are the guys now any smarter than the people that got us into this mess in the first place?
No, they're not smarter. No, it's terrifying. It's terrifying that in effect the same system is in place as was in place before, only with a taxpayer guarantee.
We want to talk before we go on much longer about baseball, because we're all baseball dorks around here. And you wrote a book called Moneyball, which actually has become a term of art in the baseball world. Some blame it for some credit you for saving baseball. Some say you ruined baseball. Can you tell us what Moneyball really was? Because there's so much myth about it.
Yes. Moneyball was a book in about how one baseball team, the Oakland A's, competed with a much smaller budget than everybody else, or most other teams. So you've got the New York Yankees spending $200 million on their 25 players, going against the Oakland A's that spend, say, at the time, $40 million on their players. And the question was, why were they doing so well? And at bottom, it's about market inefficiencies and exploiting, but it's really about how badly the market values people. I mean, that they could find misvalued baseball players was, to me, just a revelation.
If there's one thing that there's a theme in your books, it is, as you've already said, it's the guys who see the thing coming that nobody else sees. It'd be Billy Beane, who sees the things in the general manager of the A's, who sees the things about the players that nobody's valuing, these guys in the Big Short. So do you know, since you're writing about the guys who always see and the women who see what's coming next, do you know what's coming next?
I don't have any clue.
Really?
No, absolutely not. I mean, one of the amazing things to me is that when you write a book, say, about all the people who saw the subprime mortgage market collapse coming, people think you're saying that you saw the subprime mortgage market collapse coming. When you write a book, Liar's Poker for that matter, that maybe the point of Liar's Poker was if you could ask anyone in the whole world for investment advice, it should not be me.
Right.
And the minute it's published, everybody's asking me for an investment advice. I mean, I really do feel like I'm at this moment in my life where I walk out the door and I scream, I'm not Jesus, I'm Brian. The money.
Right.
And I'm just Brian, you know?
And so where is your money invested? In gold and livestock? Is it under your mattress?
You just asked me the question. I told you you'd be.
I know. I was tempted. Well,
so
whatever you're doing, I'm going to do the other thing, I guess.
And there's no point to that.
There's no point.
I'm not going to even tell you because someone might listen.
Well, Michael Lewis, we are delighted to have you on our show. Now, we have asked you here to play a game we're calling
Pew. Beep, 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 beep.
That was Carl doing ray gun noises.
Oh, I see.
That's kind of a small ray gun.
It's kind of a small ray gun. Come on, let's try it again.
Give us some
wattage here.
Got it tightened up now.
Right.
Beep. Beep.
Beep, right. Beep, Carl, repeat beep. After me. Repeat after me.
Pew, 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 pew.
Yeah, don't you know ray gun?
Pew, 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 pew.
It's Carl, universal ray gun.
Carl?
Pew, 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 pew.
That's closer.
All right, that's good. Anyway, the reason Carl is doing ray gun noises As I'm sure you're wondering, Michael.
I thought it was a kitten.
I thought it was a heart monitor.
This is one of the mild things they make me do.
I know. Anyway, Carl is doing ray gun noises, Michael. Because this week is the 50th anniversary of the first patent on the laser.
Oh.
Yes. So we're going to ask you three questions about lasers, because why not? Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice in their home answering machine. Carl, who is author Michael Lewis playing for?
Michael is playing for Sherry Arison of Chester, Vermont.
All right. Ready, Michael? Here is your first question. Laser technology can sometimes be controversial, as when it was introduced about a decade ago into what? A, the Easy Bake Oven, B, the World Pea Shooting Competition, or C, knitting?
A.
A, you're going to go for the, when they put the laser in the Easy
Bake
Oven?
I'm not going to think out loud for you. A.
You're just going to go A. You're
yeah.
Just, no. Actually, it was the World Pea Shooting Competition.
Okay, I'll slow down now.
You slow down.
I got to get two out of three, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, all the World Pea Shooting Competition happens every year in Wycham, Cambridgeshire, in England, and 10 years ago, people started attaching laser sights to their pea shooters, causing much controversy, but they have now been grudgingly accepted there. All right, next question. Over at Carnegie Mellon University, engineers are thinking up great new uses for lasers, such as which of these? A, etching the picture of the animal whose meat you are eating onto bologna, so you know. B, hitting... Hold on. B.
Now, do I need to even hear any of the others?
Well... I happen to have them.
Okay, go ahead.
B, hitting the perfect ping pong shot, or C, making really, really, really tiny hamburgers?
If I get it wrong, are you going to give me one more final try?
I am.
All right, panelists, you vote. Which should I go?
Oh, the audience wants A.
The audience wants A. Overwhelmingly A.
Oh, then I think, you know, the wisdom of crowds. I think we're going to have to go with A.
You're going to go with A? The bologna. Yes.
Oh, well done.
That's right. It was A, etching the picture onto the bologna. The idea is that it's a piece of bologna with a picture of a pig or a pig and a chicken or a cow or something unidentifiable, so you know what it is you're eating. Here's your next and final question. If you get this right, you win. We remember the Star Wars system. These are the plans to blast Soviet missiles from the sky with lasers. Well, scientists in Washington State recently adapted the technology for a new application. What is it? A, a machine that blasts buzzing mosquitoes from the sky with lasers. B, lasers mounted on lampposts that short out cell phones being used in moving cars. Or C, an educational game in which kids who get spelling questions wrong are hit with lasers.
I'm going to go with A.
You're going to go with A. You were all right again.
Oh.
Well done. They hope to bring the Star Wars mosquito laser system to market sometime in the next few years.
Oh, I want that so
Me
bad.
Me too. Carl, how did Michael Lewis do in our quiz?
Michael had two correct answers, Peter, so he wins for Sherry Arison.
Michael Lewis is a great author. His books include Moneyball, The Blind Side, but his latest is The Big Short, Inside the Doomsday Machine, in bookstores now. Michael Lewis, thank you so much for joining us on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Michael.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Mike.
For just a minute, Carl is elected Rhyme Minister in our Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Tom, former Presidents Clinton and George W. Bush have been working to bring aid to Haiti, and they visited there again this week. In a video of the visit, President Bush appears to do what to President Clinton?
I don't think he appeared to do it. He did it. He wiped his hand on Clinton's shirt.
He did do that,
shaking
yes.
hands.
Yeah. In the video, the two ex-presidents are visiting the scene of relief efforts, and they're shaking hands with a crowd of Haitians. President Bush reaches out, and he shakes somebody's hand, and then he wiggles his fingers a little, and then he clearly turns and wipes them on President Clinton's shirt. It's a little bit, it's not quite clear, but you can rewind and rewatch, and it's like, there's President Bush's hand up and down the shirt.
Well, and Clinton even turns his head a little bit and looks like, what the hell?
Well, he was. Clinton.
Now, is there any excuse like it was some sort of fond like
patterned. No, it was a real Felix and Oscar thing.
It really was crazy.
It, you know?
And Clinton, as you say, was a little startled by this. His muscle memory immediately took over. He turned and smiled and slipped President Bush a room key. Right. It was like, oh, wait a minute, sorry.
Oh, wait a minute.
No, I think that it shows that these guys have got some kind of, they're pals. I mean, they're palling around. You know, they're shaking hands with people who haven't had a functioning sanitation system in about 6 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, oh, yeah, my hand's covered in deadly bacteria. Oh, here's a president of the United States. I've seen what he eats. He won't care. Keegan, The Last Supper has been a favorite subject of artists for centuries. The most famous version, of course, Leonardo da Vinci's. There are hundreds more, though. Well, scientists looked at different versions of the scene painted over the centuries and discovered that over the years, something has changed in the picture. What?
The way that Jesus looks.
No?
The food on the table.
Yes, exactly. But how has it changed?
Oh, it's become less caloric.
You mean like as we get to the 19th century? Oh, look, he's having more fiber. Yes, so good exactly. for him.
But
not that it will do him much good. Right. But not that. It's changed not in a particularly good way.
Something.
The food as depicted has changed. I'll give you a hint. Mm-hmm. This study was done by the International Journal of Obesity.
Think sort of supersize. Supersize my Last Supper.
Yeah.
It's like, if St. Paul says, you want me to supersize that?
Yeah. That's the loaves and fishes thing, yeah. Really.
There's McDonald's. Oh, my God.
Who knew?
Holy mackerel. There's more food.
Yes,
the portion sizes. Oh, the portion sizes are larger.
Hard one.
This is from a study published, as I said, in the International Journal of Obesity. It looked at 52 renderings of the Last Supper, and it found that in the last 1,000 years, the apparent amount of food on the supper plates has increased by about 70%. This, obesity scientists say, reflects the typical portion sizes of the period in which the paintings were made. And that's why modern versions, ones painted in the last 20 or 30 years, modern versions of the Last Supper show Jesus and his disciples enjoying a KFC boneless bucket and 36-ounce big gulps of wine. In keeping with this trend, many modern churches are moving to the double-stuff communion wafer.
Yes.
Yes.
Do we actually know what they ate at the Last Supper?
Well, it was, in fact, a Passover Seder.
Right.
So we ate the traditional Passover foods. The traditional Jewish food, which I believe is Chinese takeout. In my family. No, the portion sizes did get out of hand. In fact, in some very recent renderings, you can almost hear Judas muttering under his breath, "Looks like we're going to need a bigger cross." Keegan, the Wall Street Journal is reporting on a troubling shortage faced by up-and-coming musicians. What is that shortage? A shortage of what?
Not enough strings.
No, they have plenty of strings.
A shortage for musicians.
Mm-hmm. Aspiring musicians, musicians getting started.
Oh, getting started.
Give you a hint. It's like, here's the problem. You're starting out, getting your friends together. You can't be the Who. You can't be the Guess Who. You can't be Who Cares.
Names for bands.
All the good band names have been taken.
Yes.
That's the problem, according to the Wall Street Journal.
That would be a good band name.
All the good band names are taken.
Kind of meta.
A band name.
Yes. Yeah.
Former Led Zeppelin bassist John Paul Jones came up with a perfect name for his new band. It's called, he wanted to call it Caligula. Turned out 7 other bands are already called Caligula. He settled on a name, quote, "Them Crooked Vultures," because, quote, "Every other name is taken. Think of a great band name and Google it, and you'll find a French-Canadian jam band with a MySpace page." The journal says to find something original, bands must come up with long, rambling names. But we're like, no. Just watch the news. How about you calling your band the Joe Lieberman Experience? Are you into hip-hop? Okay. Bart Stupak Shakur. How about you're in the metal, all right? Megadeth panel.
I bet that one's there.
Or if you want to do traditional American music, you can call it Joe Biden and the Big Folking Deals.
Google those next week.
We'll be back. Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can click the Contact Us link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Illinois, or our upcoming show in Colorado Springs, Colorado, on May 6th. And check out our blog, which has blog-like things on it. Hi, you're on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Billy in Rockdale, Texas.
How are things in Rockdale?
Oh, warming, very pleasant, but I'm a Yankee in exile. So
really? No, first of all, where is Rockdale?
About 50 miles east of Austin.
And how did you end up there from Yankeeville?
Joined the Navy, saw the world, met a woman, got married.
Really? So you saw the world in the Navy, and you decided of all the places in the world you wanted to be, Rockdale, Texas. Well,
my mother was from Northeast Texas, and so I'd been to Texas as a kid, and my wife's from the Houston area. I'd never been there before, and when I got down here, it was in February. I'd left Kittery, Maine in the middle of a blizzard, and I got to Texas and said, wow, why doesn't everybody live in Texas?
Have you found out why?
I can fly and said, oh my God, why does anybody live in Texas?
I see. Well, welcome to the show, Billy. Now, Carl Castle Billy is going to read you three news-related limericks. With the last word or phrase, of course, missing. He's not going to say that last word or phrase. That's your job. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly in two of the limericks, you'll be a winner. Ready to play?
Ready to play.
Here's your first limerick.
We boys without mommies or grannies, we chase after too many fannies. So many girls watched us, and that is what botched us. We womanized because we had
nannies.
Right. Mm. British psychiatrist Dr. Dennis Friedman claims hiring a nanny for your baby boy will turn him into a womanizer. Quote, it introduces your baby to the concept of the other woman, unquote. If he's raised with more than one mother figure, later on he won't be content with just one caretaker figure in his own life. Clearly, for example, Tiger Woods was raised by someone who read It Takes a Village. So that explains it. Blame your childhood nanny, Governor Sanford. Here is your next limerick.
Each year, 1.8 million quid is the damage that somebody did. That wild little junior wrecks more than petunias. That large sum is blamed on a
kid.
Right. According to research economists in Britain, kids there cause about $2.5 billion worth of property damage every year, from Play-Doh and the DVD player to unidentifiable stains on the walls. As a parent, I want to congratulate the children of Britain on their restraint. My kids alone do $2.5 billion before spring break.
Why are all these studies from Britain?
I was just going to say that.
Because they're all sitting around in England going, how the hell did we get like this? Yeah. And they're doing studies. Why are our men cheating and our children wrecking the walls? Here's your last limerick, Billy.
May they walk with a sachet or waddle. In a catwalk, girl, I want to throttle. Be they skinny or big, I still feel like a pig. I feel bad when I see any
model.
Right. For years, women have been bemoaning those skinny fashion models. They create unrealistic standards of beauty and make for unhealthy role models. That's why Dove, remember Dove, the soap company? They rolled out an ad campaign with plus-sized women in their skivvies, and why Glamour magazine started featuring jiggly women in their pages. Turns out, though, according to researchers at the University of Arizona, plus-sized models do not make women feel better about themselves. They make them feel even worse. Why? Because the only thing worse than being reminded what you don't look like is being reminded what you do look like. Carl, how did Billy do in our quiz?
Billy had three correct answers, Peter, so he wins our prize.
Well done, Billy. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Billy, for playing.
Yeah, baby. When it comes comes to females, Cosmo ain't got nothing to do with my selection. 36, 24, 36. Only if she's 5'3".
Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as they can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points, yeah, just for arbitrary reasons. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Peter, we have a big three-way tie for first place. Each of our panelists has 3 correct answers.
All right, then.
Wouldn't that also be a three-way tie for last place?
Well, be pessimist. I don't
know how you look at it.
So we have chosen randomly who's going to go first. Roxanne, it's you. The clock will start, but begin your first question. Roxanne, fill in the blank. On Tuesday, President Obama used 22 commemorative pens to sign the blank reform bill into law.
Healthcare reform.
Right? Although the dispute over Israeli settlements had not been resolved, blank ended his visit to Washington on Thursday.
Prime Minister Netanyahu.
Right. Officials in California announced that the November ballot will include a measure to legalize blank.
Marijuana.
Right. Discovery Communication Channel, TLC, announced plans this week for a reality show featuring blank and her family.
Sarah Palin.
Right. A British man tired of tailgaters has rigged his moped with a blank.
A cannon that shoots flames.
Exactly right. Facing the rear, of course. More women came forward this week claiming to have had affairs with Jesse James, the estranged husband of actress blank.
Sandra Bullock.
Right. At a communications industry event on Tuesday, blank unveiled the first 4G phone.
Apple.
No, Sprint. A Chicago woman has sued a movie theater saying she was injured when she tried to blank during a film.
She was making a phone call and an armrest fell on
That's
her.
That's exactly right. The woman bent over to, quote, discreetly answer her cell phone when the armrest of her seat suddenly flipped down, smacking her in the head. She is suing the movie theater for her injury, but the armrest refused to apologize. It said, quote, find a jury that will convict me. Carl, how did Roxanne do in our quiz?
Roxanne had a great round, Peter. 7 correct answers, 14 more points. She now has 17 points, and Roxanne has the lead.
Keegan, you're up next. Please fill in the blank. This week, Defense Secretary Robert Gates issued new guidelines relaxing enforcement of the military's blank policy.
Don't ask, don't tell.
Right. The Obama administration agreed on a new strategic arms reduction treaty with blank this week.
Pakistan.
No, with Russia. In the wake of recent priest abuse scandals, critics attacked the blank for failing to act.
Pope.
Right. An Illinois woman told police that she was held hostage in her home by a blank for several hours.
A bear.
No, a goose. Oh. That had romantic feelings toward the concrete goose statue on her porch. Best known for his role in the groundbreaking television series I Spy, blank died this week at age 79.
Robert Cole.
Right. Scientists believe that a 40,000-year-old bone found in Siberia belongs to a previously unknown species of blank.
Humanoid.
Yes, yeah. Human, yes. A California couple who allegedly sold tens of thousands of dollars in stolen toys on eBay were identified and arrested after they blanked.
They went to the store to sell the toys in front of the store.
They were arrested, and they have since been sentenced after they went on the Dr. Phil show to brag about how much money they made selling stolen toys on eBay.
Wow.
Matthew Eaton and his wife Laura were not shy about describing their criminal activities in detail to Dr. Phil and his national television audience. After their arrest, the Eatons explained that they realized the segment would be televised, but since they were on the Dr. Phil show, they honestly did not expect anyone to see it.
Of course.
Carl, how did Keegan-Michael Key do on our quiz?
Keegan had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. He now has 11 points, but Roxanne still has the lead with 17.
There you are. All right. So Tom will have to do well to take it away from her, right?
Well, Tom will need 7 to tie, 8 to win outright.
Here we go, Tom. This is for the game. In a new audio tape, Osama bin Laden threatened American lives if the mastermind of the blank attacks is executed.
9/11.
Right. A new online tracking tool allows people to see how quickly folks in their communities have returned their 2010 blank forms.
The census form.
Right. After money problems and charges of corruption, the community organizing group Blank is closing its doors after 40 years.
Acorn.
Right. After battles over censorship, Google rerouted traffic from its search engine in Blank to Hong Kong.
China.
Right. Defense engineers at Lund Technologies have come up with a variable velocity assault rifle, which is a switch from its previous more well-known product, Blank.
The uni-velocity.
No. The T Tickle Me Elmo doll. After an accident in New Jersey, former pitcher Blank was arrested again for driving under the influence of drugs.
Oh, gosh, I just read that story. I don't know. I forget.
Dwight Gooden. Bankers in Connecticut were able to get police there in time to foil a robbery when the criminals blanked.
Oh, they phoned in advance.
Yes, they did. They called ahead to request the money before they arrived. It's always thoughtful to plan ahead, so when two thieves planned to rob the People's United Bank in Connecticut, they called ahead so the bank would have the money handy, save on waiting time. The bank was happy to oblige, and as a thank you, threw in a few police officers at no extra charge.
When those guys get out, they should plan a caper with the eBay couple.
That's true.
That should go swimmingly.
So. Carl, did Tom do well enough to win?
Well, Tom needed at least 7 correct answers to tie. He had just 5. So with 17 points, Roxanne Roberts is this week's champion.
Well done. Congratulations, Roxanne. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists what one unexpected outcome will be from the 2,000-plus page landmark healthcare bill. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and LendingTree, providing customers with the ability to manage their money, credit, and loans all in one place at LendingTree.com. The Avis Family Foundation, supporting expanded foreign news online and on air. And CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight, 436 miles on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX, how tomorrow moves. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio. In association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Christine Fiedler. Our web guru, Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Velarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Liddeman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White, the senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, what will be an unexpected outcome of the big health care bill? Keegan-Michael Key.
A new fashion statement, drab green uni jumpers that we'll all be wearing as members of this new communist state.
We will never clash. Roxanne Roberts.
Speaker Nancy Pelosi's Botox treatments will no longer be covered, causing her eyebrows to move for the first time in 6 years.
And Tom Baudet.
Darwin Awards competition will intensify as young, stupid, crazy people who have never before had insurance will become even stupider and crazier.
Well, panel, if any of those things happen as a result of the health care bill, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Roxanne Roberts, Tom Baudet, Keegan, Michael Key. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. Woo! This is NPR.